This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, man's first landing on the moon. In about 25 minutes from now, at 4 hours 55 GMT, another critical point in this 8-day flight, the burning of the main spacecraft engine for TEI, trans-Earth injection. This maneuver will take Apollo 11 out of its lunar orbit and start it back on its 400,000-kilometer journey back to Earth. Apollo 11 is now almost 135 hours into its mission. On the moving toward the backside of the moon, we have just lost signal. Will be ending its 30th revolution very soon, at 110 kilometers above the lunar surface. But let's get our first status report now, as the astronauts prepare to leave the moon's gravity and start back for home, to the manned spacecraft center in Houston, Texas, and correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, just as our special broadcast went on the air there, we got loss of signal from the spacecraft Apollo 11, now called Apollo 11, no longer called Columbia, as the astronauts went around the west side of the moon in preparation for this trans-Earth injection burn. It's to come at 135 hours, 34 minutes, 5 seconds, according to the latest update we've received from Mission Control. That is about 23 minutes and 58 seconds from right now, and we're watching a countdown clock preparing for that. 3,284 feet per second to be added to the speed to cause Apollo 11 to come out of lunar orbit and begin coming around toward the moon. Some 10,000 pounds of fuel will be used in this burn. The expected burn time, 2 minutes and 28 seconds. Ignition, 23 minutes, 23 seconds from now. Bill?
From our VOA Apollo News Center in Washington and from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, the Voice of America is broadcasting full coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Today, in just about 22 minutes from now, TEI, trans-Earth injection, the critical firing of Apollo 11's main rocket engine. This will take the spacecraft out of its lunar orbit and put it onto a path for its long journey back to Earth. This is William McCrory reporting from the VOA Apollo News Center. I'll be joined here at our anchor desk by Donald Beatty, a program manager for plans in the Apollo Lunar Exploration Office, and Merle Waugh in the program office for NASA's Advanced Manned Missions. While we're waiting for further reports from Apollo Mission Control, here are the broadcast meter bands for this coverage. We are broadcasting to Europe on the 19, 25, 31, 41, 49, and 75 meter bands. To Latin America on the 19, 25, and 31 meter bands. For Africa, the 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49 meter bands. We are broadcasting to East Asia and the Pacific on the 11, 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, and 41 meter bands shortwave, and on 263 meters medium wave. To the Middle East on the 19 meter band. To South Asia on the 19, 25, and 41 meter band shortwave. Those are the broadcast meter bands for the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Today, trans-Earth injection, the firing of the spacecraft's main engine, taking it out of lunar orbit, sending it back on its way to Earth. Well, Don Beatty, we want to welcome you back once again to our anchor desk. Does this event seem a bit anticlimactic to you after all of the things that have happened with the Apollo 11 flight, the Eagle landing on the moon, the moonwalk, the successful ascent some hours ago, and now we're waiting for trans-Earth injection?
Well, I think it certainly is in a way, Bill. The two new and more dangerous parts of the mission are behind us now. The landing on the moon, the liftoff, things that we had never done before. But these last two critical items still remain in front of us. That is the trans-Earth injection and finally the entry and splashdown.
Well, Merle Waugh, you've been with us through all of the critical phases of this flight. TEI, while it may seem somewhat routine, we've done it twice before, the trans-Earth injection. It is a critical phase, isn't it?
Yes, and there's always that big suspense while you're waiting for the spacecraft to reappear from the backside of the moon to find out whether everything went all right. There's a long period of suspense. But as you say, we have been through it two times before, and we certainly expect this one to be as successful as the past ones.
Well, we're now 135 hours and 5 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11. For some 29 hours, we were calling them Eagle and Columbia, the two spacecraft, of course, having separated. Apollo, or rather Eagle, going down to the surface of the moon, and the command module, Columbia, circling the moon at about 110 kilometers above the surface of the moon. A short time before this flight began, correspondent Rhett Turner talked with Ted Foss, the chief of the geology branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. He discussed with him just how the rock and soil samples from the moon will be used in geological research once these samples are brought back to Earth. By the way, they were transferred a few hours ago from the lunar module into the command spacecraft, Apollo 11, to bring back to Earth. How the samples will be distributed to some 150 principal investigators in various parts of the world.
Ted, you're one of those here at the Manned Spacecraft Center most anxious to see some of the lunar material. What are you going to do?
Well, I'll be involved in the lunar material in several ways. I am a co-investigator on one experiment to study the alpha particle activity of returned lunar samples, but also I'm involved in what's called the field geology experiment, which has the responsibility of gathering all of the data on the geology of the lunar landing site and pulling it together into a coherent geologic picture. Essentially, what we hope to produce is a geologic map of the landing site, which will show the distribution of the different rock types and hopefully will allow us to make some interpretations as to the origins and history of the rocks at the surface site. Of course, there are something like 150 or 160 other principal investigators around the world who will be studying specific lunar samples for very specific types of information. Some will be trying to determine the age of the materials, some the chemical composition, some the physical properties such as density and porosity and so on.
You're one of those here in the Manned Spacecraft Center associated with the Lunar Receiving Laboratory, which will see them first, though, aren't you?
Yes, that's true. Most of the physical scientists who work in the Lunar Receiving Laboratory are part of my branch, and we have quite a few people in the group who will be members of the actual team that will make the first examinations and prepare a sample catalog, which will then be distributed to all the interested scientists around the world.
Will there be any rather fast release of information on findings before the material goes out for further analysis to specific scientists around the world?
Oh, I'm sure there will. I'm sure that probably the first release of information will come from the astronauts on the surface. I hope that they're well enough trained in geology by now that they'll be able to give us a lot of information before they ever get back in the spacecraft. And then, of course, once the rock boxes are opened here and the first examinations are made, the trained geologists and mineralogists who are doing this task will be able to make a lot of identifications just immediately by visual observation. And we do have the capabilities for some limited chemical analysis and even some structural analysis by X-ray diffraction.
Then it will be some time then before material goes to principal investigators and we hear more explicit analysis from scientists elsewhere. Is that right?
That's correct. Of course, the principal investigators have been set up for quite some time to do these very specific experiments, and the last thing we want to do is scoop them on their scientific data, so that our main effort here will be to learn just enough about the samples so that we can make a most meaningful distribution of the individual samples and get each principal investigator the kind of sample that he most needs for his type of work. And then we anticipate it'll be a period of several months before there will be a general reporting of these investigations.
Thanks very much, Ted Foss, Chief of the Geology Branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner.
We're standing by here in our VOA Apollo News Center, waiting for the firing of that big engine on the spacecraft, a firing that will place it back on its way to the Earth, take it out of the gravitational pull of the moon, the process we call TEI, Trans-Earth Injection. Rhett Turner in Houston, what does the countdown clock show now?
14 minutes and 15 seconds until ignition of the big service propulsion system engine. This is the second engine that has to work. It's the only one that can impart enough velocity to the spacecraft to cause it to go out of lunar orbit and begin to sling off toward the Earth with a rendezvous and splashdown on Thursday morning. 13 minutes and 50 seconds now. We should have acquisition of signal 24 minutes from now, 24:10 to be exact, and get confirmation from the astronauts on the burn of that rocket.
So that we'll have to wait at least 24 minutes until we find out if the engine fired correctly.
We have two possibilities. If they do not burn the engine, they will still be in lunar orbit, and it would be some...
About... What, 2 hours
seven,
again?
9 minutes longer. It would take some 9 minutes longer for them to come into view. So if they come around the side of the moon on time, we know, even before they say something to us, that the engine burned. At least partially.
Well, this event will climax another very busy day, an important day in this 8-day lunar landing mission. It began about 12 hours ago when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were able to fire that ascent engine perfectly. That came at about 17 hours 54 on Monday. A perfect liftoff from the moon by the lunar landing craft Eagle. That after about 21 hours and 36 minutes on the lunar surface. I wonder, Rhett, if you could go along the timeline and describe some of the other events after that ascent.
Well, the ascent was right on time. The liftoff was about 700 milliseconds off the zero liftoff time. Rocco Patron, the director of launch operations, is very fast that all of these big Saturn V liftoffs have been on time to such an extent, less than 1 second off, and that is caused by some of the computer mechanisms, and they fully expect it. The rocket burned beautifully all the way up into orbit. Took about 11 minutes and some 40 to 50 seconds to place over 100,000 pounds into orbit around the Earth. 2 hours and 40 minutes after that, we got translunar injection, the third stage of the Saturn V rocket fired, again imparting enough velocity to this great mass to sling it away from the Earth and send it on a trajectory which was aimed at the moon. At that point, the trajectory was so accurate that if nothing else had been touched, if no further rocket firings had been initiated, the spacecraft combination and the S-4B rocket attached would go around the moon and return on what is called a free return trajectory to Earth. There were four mid-course maneuvers scheduled. Only one of these was carried out. That trajectory was so accurate, and this caused the spacecraft to follow just a little sharper or lower angle to the moon than originally anticipated, and they arrived at the lunar orbit insertion point 4 minutes ahead of schedule. LOI, Lunar Orbit Insertion. This is when the service propulsion system of the command module fires, slowing the spacecraft down to some 4,000 kilometers per hour speed as it goes around behind the moon and reducing it into lunar orbit, the pull of the moon equaling the velocity of the forces which would tend to cause the spacecraft to sling on outward, right into a balanced thing called an orbit. And there the command module has been since. Slowly, there was a second lunar orbit insertion burn just a revolution later, in which one or two revolutions later, a few hours later, to circularize the command module orbit. And a slight bias to this orbit was initiated because of experience learned in previous flights in Apollos 8 and 10, which showed that the command module sitting there for a couple of days in orbit around the moon would slowly decay from its circular orbit. This caused by these mass concentrations at various spots on the lunar surface. So they made the orbit just very, very slightly egg-shaped, and in the time period that the lunar module is taken to go down to the surface and back, the command module's orbit has very slowly reduced to an almost circular orbit. It isn't quite circular, but it was certainly in the right place at the right time when the lunar module Eagle came back up from the surface for rendezvous and docking. Now we're waiting for trans-Earth injection, this last and most important burn of all, by the service propulsion system engine. That'll come 8 minutes, 40 seconds from now as the clock continues to count down.
Well, Rhett Turner, at the time of docking, I understand that there was a kind of jolting, some problem there.
I have a transcript here with exactly what was said. If you'll give me a moment, I'll locate that. Here we are. Mike Collins said...
This came at 21 hours 35 GMT. That was about a little more than 7 hours ago.
Mike Collins said, "That was a funny one. I'm pumping up cabin pressures. You know, I didn't feel it strike," meaning he didn't feel the lunar module as it latched. "And then I thought things were pretty steady. I went to retract there, and that's when all hell broke loose. For you guys, did it appear to you that you were jerking around quite a bit during the retract cycle?" And Neil Armstrong answered, "Yeah, it seemed to happen at the time I put the contact thrust to it, and apparently it wasn't centered because somehow or other I accidentally got off in attitude, and then the attitude hold system started firing." Mike Collins then responded, "Yeah, as I was sure... I was sure busy there for a couple of seconds. Are you hearing me all right?" Apparently Neil was hearing him all right, but we were having great difficulty
at
hearing
that time,
him here
yes.
on Earth.
Well, apparently that is the explanation then of that that movement or jolting or
that excuse me.
Go ahead, Rhett.
That exclamation by Mike was in no way meant to be taken seriously, that there was any anything wrong.
Yes.
It just caused some jerking and wobbling around. The latch was effected properly. And, of course, they latched right on, and then it was firm, and that was the end of that. I heard Neil Armstrong and Mike exchange one other bit of conversation. I don't see it in the transcript. Sometimes the girls listening to this can't understand it much better than we can through the static. And that was, he says, "I heard a squeal there." And we've heard some squeals in the past. In fact, on Apollo 8, there was a rather whistling, squealing sound right at the time that the latches were engaging during docking.
Let me ask our colleagues here, Don Beattie or Merrill Waugh, if they can give us any explanation for that squeal. Don?
No, I remember that they mentioned that on Apollo 8, but I'm not aware that they have figured out what was causing the squeal.
Possibly just the docking, the insertion of the probe into the drogue there, making a squeal. We should mention to our listeners that this is the Voice of America, broadcasting worldwide. We're standing by for trans-Earth injection. At the moment, Apollo 11 is on the backside of the moon. We're now some 135 hours and 18 minutes into the 8-day mission of Apollo 11.
5 minutes, 20 seconds until ignition is expected.
Will we get a countdown from Mission Control on this?
I would expect that Doug Ward would key his microphone in Mission Control and confirm this time clock which we're watching.
It's been about over 7 hours now since that successful redocking. I wonder if you could explain to our listeners, Rhett, what the astronauts have been doing. Of course, they had a lot of housekeeping chores to do with the lunar module before they jettisoned the limb.
I might mention one thing right ahead of that. After the lunar surface operations last night, they went back aboard to try to get a good night's sleep. We understand that they did not. I asked Dr. Berry this afternoon a couple of questions in our daily afternoon briefing about that. Apparently, both Aldrin and Armstrong only got an hour to 1 hour, 15 minutes of sound sleep. There was some 4 to 5 hours of fitful or very light and somewhat restless sleep. The doctors are very happy. The flight surgeon is very happy with the condition of the astronauts on the lunar surface and the way they performed. It frightened Dr. Berry just a little bit when he saw Buzz Aldrin running
and
there
leaping
on the surface. He actually was running right across our TV picture from around behind the lunar module off into the distance. He was afraid he might injure himself if he fell down.
He almost tripped over a television cable, if I remember correctly.
At one point. Yeah. Now, you asked me what they've been doing in the last few hours?
Yes.
Preparing, of course, for this trans-Earth injection after docking this afternoon. The astronauts actually got ahead of schedule in stowing away all of the necessary items which should be tied down and properly battened down in the command module. A number of items are to be disposed of in the lunar module. These were transferred back and forth through the tunnel. And all of the rock boxes with those lunar samples safely in the command module now, of course. And then, almost an hour early, they jettisoned the lunar module. So Eagle is being left in orbit around the moon, and it's expected to be there for months and months and months, though
eventually
power systems will fade out in the next day or so.
Eventually, I suppose that orbit will deteriorate, and it will go down to the lunar surface, will it not?
That's a good guess. Eventually it will deteriorate. One of the flight dynamics officers, Phil Schaffer, whom we'll hear about later, the chief flight dynamics officer, told me that first of all it'll go into a somewhat egg-shaped orbit or elliptical orbit, and then it'll probably decay back into a circular orbit for a period of time and go into another elliptical orbit. And if it happens to go into an elliptical orbit that dips down low enough to the surface, it might eventually hit the top of one of those mountains on the moon. But it'll be there for quite a while.
Now, I believe during Apollo 10, in jettisoning the that lunar module, and I'll ask my colleagues here to correct me, too.
Snoopy.
They fired Snoopy's engine, did they not? And put it off in an orbit around
the sun?
Toward the sun, yes. But I wonder why they decided not to do that with this particular lunar spacecraft, Don Beatty.
I believe that the LEM Eagle didn't have that restart capability that they'd had on the Apollo 10 LEM. I think that LEM was a little bit unique.
In other words, we probably about exhausted the fuel during the ascent from the surface of the moon, whereas during Apollo 10, of course, it came up only from the 50,000-foot mark above the lunar surface.
They've also been watching the primary guidance and navigation control system. Before Armstrong and Aldrin climbed back into the command module, they turned off the cooling system to the primary navigation system to see how long it would operate as it gradually heated up. It began to fail just about 30 minutes ago, we understand. Here's Apollo Control.
As scheduled, the burn to start Apollo 11 on its trajectory back to Earth. We're now 15 seconds from the scheduled ignition time. That burn will last about 2 minutes 28 seconds and consume 10,000 pounds of propellant. The crew should be burning at this time. Of course, that maneuver is performed on the backside of the moon. We have no data from the spacecraft here in mission control at this time. We won't know how the burn went for about another 10 minutes, which is the time at which we're scheduled to reacquire Apollo 11.
You're hearing the very silent noise of nothing.
No signal.
Coming from space.
During the course of this burn, the spacecraft will increase its speed by about 3,280 feet per second, or about 2,240 miles per hour.
Thank you, contact net one.
Honey, tackle. Grom.
Roger, stand by for a keying check. Houston, contact testing. One. 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's the communications network conducting a comm check.
Go ahead.
It's called.
100% on King.
Roger.
That's Guam Comtech, 100% King. Good modulation. How would you like the focus configured?
This is getting on the capsule communicator's air-to-ground loop.
We will have the Vogas in the CSM downlink.
Honeysuckle will come.
These are some of the men behind the astronauts, whom we almost never hear. Those, you heard some an engineer at Guam?
Guam, this is Houston Comtech, here go.
That's Guam.
Honeysuckle, roger. Guam, roger.
Honeysuckle Creek in Australia. Communications check. Well, that's a rarity here on the network right there, a communications check to make sure that everything is go for this AOS and report back as soon as the astronauts come into view in the command module Columbia. For our listeners down in Australia, listening back on radio with us, you could hear one of the engineers right there at the Honeysuckle
Transit
Creek tracking station.
Should be completed in about 10 seconds from now.
And the speed should rise by about 3,500 kilometers per hour. That would make about...
And we should have shut down at this time. At this point, Apollo 11 should be traveling at a speed of about 8,660 feet per second, or about 5,900 miles per hour, and should be on its way back to Earth, headed for a splashdown in the Pacific Ocean at 195 hours, 18 minutes.
That's right on schedule, according to the flight plan. Maybe 40 seconds
early. With a successful burn, we should reacquire Apollo 11 in 7 minutes, 20 seconds from now.
That would be a speed of about 7,500 kilometers per hour, that 5,900 miles per hour.
Give me those again, would you? Let me jot them down, too. 3,284 feet per second is the additional velocity added to the orbital speed, which means they're picking up how much speed in kilometers, Bill?
About 3,500. You're picking up about 3,500 kilometers per hour added to your 4,000 kilometers per hour. These are rounded figures, of course. Mission Control, though, gave us a speed of about 5,900 miles per hour. Don, was that nautical miles per hour or statute? I believe they're using nautical.
I think
yes.
That's right, Bill.
Everything's in nautical that you hear coming from Mission Control.
So I believe our figures are roughly correct, at least about 7,500 kilometers per hour.
I have one more quick check here to go along with that. In kilometers per hour, 8,660 feet per second, which is the departure velocity from the moon, would be 9,502 kilometers per hour. According to one great gigantic chart here we have. This is a challenge. It's converting all
converting
of these nautical miles per hour and feet per second into the metric system, so that a lot of people who don't use the English measuring system can understand it. I'm one of those who goes along with the scientific community as a strong proponent of the United States and Great Britain and the other English-speaking nations converting to the metric system, but it would cost thousands of millions of dollars to convert tools and everything that has to do with measuring. That isn't important at this point.
Right.
5 minutes and 15 seconds until we should acquire signal from the command module, from Columbia, Apollo 11.
Rhett Turner, while we're waiting for acquisition of signal, I believe we have time at least for a very brief newscast. This program is originating in Washington.
Would you like to have a color photograph of the three Apollo 11 astronauts? We would be happy to send you one if you write to The Voice of America, Washington, D.C., USA, Box 8108. Citizens of the United States are not eligible.
This is The Voice of America. We will return to our live coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
The world still cheers. An enormous number of messages from world leaders are pouring into the White House congratulating the United States on the Apollo 11 mission. Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia told President Nixon that the mission reflected the tenacity and genius of the United States. In his message to the White House, the African ruler also called the American moon flight a great achievement not only for the United States, but for all humanity. And the dozens of other messages were like that. Secretary General U Thant of the United Nations called on the nations of the world to take inspiration from this moment and go forward together in peace here on Earth. Premier Alexei Kosygin of the Soviet Union expressed his compliments on the moon flight during a meeting Monday with former American Vice President Hubert Humphrey. Mr. Humphrey told a news conference that the Soviet premier also extended his personal good wishes to the astronauts and their families. He quoted the premier as saying that the Kremlin wishes to work with the United States for peace. Moscow television broadcast a videotape about 5 hours after the actual event. The showing prompted one Moscow citizen to cry, "This is the beginning of a new era." Georgi Petrov of the Soviet Institute for Cosmic Research called the Apollo mission an outstanding achievement. And the Soviet cosmonaut Konstantin Fyokostov called the moon landing a major milestone in the development of space research. Most of the world celebrated the event, turning the 24 hours after the landing into a holiday of almost worldwide proportions. Four nations, however, made no mention of the moon landing. These were Communist China, North Korea, North Vietnam, and Albania. President Nixon will attend the annual American sport classic, the All-Star Baseball Game, in Washington before starting on his seven-nation journey around the world. After the game Tuesday night, Mr. Nixon will fly to the Pacific to join the aircraft carrier Hornet and watch the return and recovery of the Apollo 11 moon travelers and to personally welcome them. The president has scheduled consultations with leaders of the seven countries he will visit, but he will also tour the Jakarta Fair, plant a tree in India, receive a decoration in Pakistan, and tour an apartment complex and a village museum in Romania. On his way home, Mr. Nixon is to hold informal plane-side conversations with Prime Minister Harold Wilson at Mildenhall Air Force Base in England. A new set of regulations easing restrictions on travel by Americans to Communist China and the purchase of goods made in Communist China are scheduled to go into effect Wednesday. The State Department called the action consistent with the desire of the Nixon administration to relax tensions and promote peaceful contact between the United States and Communist China. President Nixon awarded American Airlines a South Pacific air route that runs from America's east coast to Australia. Police in Nairobi said they have arrested a man on charges of murder in the death of Tom Mboya, Kenya's economic and planning minister, who was shot to death on a Nairobi sidewalk earlier this month. The suspect was identified as Nahashan Isaac Njenga Njoroge. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is John Cooley reporting.
You're listening to a broadcast of Apollo 11 about to burn its rocket engine to send it on a trajectory toward the Earth. That burn should come in 7 seconds from now. This broadcast from the Voice of America in Houston and Washington. I beg your pardon, that burn should have occurred. We should be acquiring the spacecraft as it comes around the side of the moon right now.
And there's the cue. We have acquisition of signal.
Acquisition of signal, meaning that telemetry is coming in from the spacecraft. The burn took place behind the moon, out of touch with the Earth, and this point, this countdown there, was to the time when the spacecraft should come into view. Let's stand by for the first words we may hear.
We have data right on schedule.
We want to hear what the astronauts have to say.
Right. 0 minus 0.7 minus 0.2.
That's one of the men in the Mission Control Center. No communication from space yet. The burn must have been good because they came into view and we got acquisition of signal right on time.
Hello, Apollo 11, Houston. How did it go? Over.
That's Charlie Duke making a call to Apollo 11.
Help open up the LRL doors, Charlie.
Roger. We got you coming home.
Open up the LRL doors. That sounded like Neil Armstrong.
Okay, burn status. Delta pig was zero. Burn time was 2+3, 0. They had angle, delta ATX after trim was 0.1, VGY 0.9, VGC 0.1, delta VC minus 17.9er, fuel 10.6. Aux 10.4, unbalanced minus 50.
Roger, copy, Neil. Sounds good to us.
You heard. You heard Neil Armstrong
and
say.
Apollo 11, Houston, all your systems look real good to us. We'll keep you posted.
A call from Charlie Duke, the capsule communicator.
Hey, Charlie boy, looking good here. That was a beautiful burn. They don't come any finer.
Roger.
That's Mike Collins. That was a beautiful burn. They don't come any finer, he said. Hey, Charlie boy, it looked good here. First words, I believe, were from Neil Armstrong saying, open up the LRL doors, Charlie. And Charlie said, good,
Apollo
we got you coming
Houston,
home.
I wondered if you compared your your state vector after TEI with the one in the limb slides, over.
Yes, sir. That looked very nice. Burb 83 was plus 00070 and minus 00008.
Roger.
The LRL mentioned there, the Lunar Receiving Laboratory. This is the great multi-million-dollar installation designed to hold them in quarantine for 21 days after closing the hatch on the moon to make sure they don't bring back any extraterrestrial organisms which could endanger life on Earth. You'll be hearing a lot about that in the next day or two as they're on the way home.
11, Houston, looking at your Bank Bravo nitrogen tank, it didn't leak a bit. Didn't leak a bit this time, over.
Roger, look good here. Chamber pressure was hanging in there around 100. The latter part of the burn, it started oscillating a little bit and got down a little bit below 100.
Roger.
96 or so.
Roger.
Armstrong said it'd look good here in a more comprehensive report from Mike Collins, whose voice I'm sure you could understand loud and clear. Our broadcast being monitored by the recovery ships. Some 2,200 men on the aircraft carrier Hornet out there in the Pacific. I hope the signal is good. It's night here in Houston.
The conversation so far has been from Neil Armstrong and Mike Collins. That last comment came from Collins. Our first report after acquisition was from Neil Armstrong.
Apollo 11 is now on the way home toward that aircraft carrier Hornet out in the middle of the Pacific. Another one of the fine ships waiting for an emergency pickup location, the Ozark, with some 800 men aboard near the equator off Brazil. We understand they're tuned to our Voice of America broadcast, and I hope the signals are good tonight, man. They're on the way home. Should splash down right on time, within 40 seconds of the originally planned time. 195 hours, 18 minutes, 25 seconds is the expected splash time as of this moment, before any mid-course corrections are fired and or before we hear final modifications or refinement of the trajectory by the flight dynamics officers in Mission Control.
Well, another critical point has passed in this.
That trans-Earth injection burn was very close to nominal. At this time, we show the spacecraft traveling at a speed of 7,603 feet per second, the velocity already beginning to drop off. And we're at an altitude of 445 nautical miles now from the moon.
Well on their way. On their way, leaving the moon, on their way back to Earth, that 400,000 kilometer trip.
I'm reminded of Tom Stafford's remark on Apollo 10 as they began this journey back right after TEI, trans-Earth injection. He said, man, we seem to be going straight up. It's as though we were going straight up from the surface and looking back. I'm sure Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins are doing the same.
They're traveling now at about 8,300 kilometers per hour, translated from that 7,603 feet per second.
Bill, if I may make a correction there, according to Doug Ward's information, that was 8,660 feet per second would be the velocity there at that burn, some 9,502 kilometers per hour. Did he mention that they are slowing down now already?
I believe he did. Uh-huh. Yes, he did. They've begun to slow down.
That would make that figure be the result. That slowed down in a hurry there, didn't it?
By 1,000 kilometers per hour. But when they reach re-entry or entry velocity, they'll be up to about 39,483 kilometers per hour. A slight difference by about the time they're ready to come down. Merle Waugh is shaking his head.
I don't believe that they slow down. The burn is on the exact center of the ellipse of the total orbit, and it just seems to me like they would be accelerating continuously from that point on. But
I think I'm sure there is some slowing somewhere after this burn as they come out away from the surface of the moon. I can't recall. We just better follow those figures as they come from Mission Control. And then it picks up speed as the Earth's gravity takes hold. There is a period during which the moon's gravity is exerting a much greater effect on the spacecraft, as though it were just in a ballistic trajectory up and back down again. But then that apogee actually moves past the point at which the moon's gravity has a greater effect, and then the Earth's gravity takes over, and it really begins to pick up speed from then on. I had a sheet around here somewhere, and in fact, I might dig it up if you want to go ahead for a few minutes, and we can give you some idea of that track. I think I have the information in one of these many documents. You should see the stack of them around me here in Houston.
That happens, and of course, in our own Apollo News Center here. Well, let's look ahead for a few moments at the flight plan. Now that
Apollo Control, we now show the spacecraft traveling at 7,378 feet per second, altitude 568 nautical miles.
It has slowed down.
It has slowed down, yes.
The next order of business will be to get the crew to sleep. Flight Director Gene Kranz requested his flight controllers prior to acquisition of signal to review their procedures and to take as many steps as possible to get the crew to sleep as soon as possible. Now, there will be a press conference in the Building 1 auditorium, and we estimate the time on that at about 12:30 Central Daylight Time.
There is a point at 148 hours into the mission when the spacecraft will have slowed to about 4,000 feet per second in relation to its velocity from the moon, and then we will switch to an Earth-based reference velocity. It will be moving at 3,900 feet per second, and at that point, it will begin to pick up speed.
Engineer reports that we've just had acquisition of signal from Eagle, which is still in lunar orbit. The last fix that we had on Eagle's orbit showed an apogee of 64.1 and a apocynthian rather of 64.1 and a paracynthian of 54.4 nautical miles.
By acquisition of signal, I assume that they have left the radio transmitters turned on aboard Eagle.
The certainly the transponder.
The spacecraft altitude has now climbed to almost 700 nautical miles from the moon. We show a weight of 26,510 pounds, about 10,000 pounds less than what we had, actually about 1,100 or 11,000 pounds. Let's correct that, about 10,100 pounds less than what we had prior to the trans-Earth injection burn.
Obviously, if they were watching the primary guidance and navigation system performance, they would be getting telemetry data on Eagle, and so it must be transmitting under full conditions until the batteries run out. And as I reported earlier, the primary guidance and navigation system has finally succumbed to the heat after being denied its coolant. This was to see what would happen in an emergency situation of this sort.
In a way, Red, it's really too bad we can't continue tracking the LEM because it would give us some additional very valuable information on the MASCONs. It would be something that maybe we could hope to do on some future mission.
Don, to what extent can the lunar module be skin-tracked after the transponder goes, after the power dies, after the batteries give out?
It's my understanding that there is no chance at all to skin-track the LEM at that distance.
A skin-track means just tracking an inert object in space or in the air with a radar device on the ground. This accurate tracking at this distance, as you're saying there, implies the necessity, it requires a transponder or a device which answers the radar signal. Is that right?
That's correct.
There's sure a lot of natural corner reflectors on that lunar module, though. They just might happen to pick up something once in a while.
Well,
what
we
does that do? Amplify the radar bounce signal?
Right.
Well, we looked into the possibility of skin tracking the S-4B at that distance, and it was concluded that it wouldn't be possible. So I imagine the LEM being a much smaller vehicle, that it's even less possible.
Well, let's give you technologists another year. You might come up with something like that.
I believe that it'll probably be there for another year. There's nothing to slow it down, is there?
Well, the thing that will greatly affect it, of course, are the MASCONs, and those will perturb the orbit rather quickly, I would suspect, a lot faster than we would have thought just a year or so ago.
We better explain that term MASCON again. We've used it quite often. That is...
Apollo 11, Houston, would you give us two and accept? We got a ResMat for you, over.
That is the irregular gravitational pull, putting it very simply,
okay.
from the moon. Communications now with the spacecraft.
Loud and clear, that high-gain antenna on the lunar module, on the command module, on Apollo 11 now, as we should call it.
The lunar module we've left behind. The Eagle is still orbiting around the moon.
Reporting on the trans-Earth injection burn, the burn time was 2 minutes 28 seconds. It added some 3,500 kilometers per hour velocity to the spacecraft. And initially, that caused the speed as the spacecraft was leaving the moon to move up to 9,500 kilometers per hour. at which, immediately after the burn, as the spacecraft sailed off out of lunar orbit toward the Earth, it began slowing just a bit. It's already some 1,000 kilometers or so per hour slower. And splash is expected right on time. That's all I had, Bill.
That speed will begin to pick up once the Apollo 11 spacecraft gets in the range of the Earth's gravitational pull.
That's predicted to be at 148 hours into the mission. That would be about 13 hours from now.
And this trip back is a little shorter than the one going out, about 59 and a half hours. Is this because of the trajectory that they're using, or is it a greater speed? I'll ask any of my colleagues to answer that.
I believe, Bill, that there is actually a greater speed involved. The spacecraft across was much heavier going out, but I believe that at that critical point where it passes from the Earth, from the Moon to the Earth's gravitational attraction, that the speed is greater than vice versa going back out. It slowed more going out than coming the other way.
In other words, you're getting a stronger pull from the Earth's gravity once you're within the range of that gravitational pull.
Yes.
Well, the Voice of America is broadcasting throughout the world, live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. We've had a successful firing of that main spacecraft engine, putting the Apollo 11 on its path back to Earth. It's 400,000 kilometer path.
Apollo 11, Houston, we got the load in. You can go back to block, over.
They've got the load in the computer. You can go back to block, says Charlie.
We're
Duke.
There.
Incidentally, after the spacecraft comes into view, the Earth tracking station, in this case I believe it's Honeysuckle Creek in Australia, and I'm pretty sure Goldstone, California can lock on at this point too. They would be tracking the spacecraft very accurately. Phil Schaffer, the chief flight dynamics officer.
The film seems to be working out pretty well, Charlie. The amount we carried looks like we carried just about what we needed.
Wonderful.
That was Mike Collins. Phil Schaffer, the flight dynamics officer, tells me that it takes about 25 minutes.
16-millimeter roll of the ASA 1000 color interior film. We were thinking of shooting that near an entry out window number 4 on a bracket, and if I get the camera guy sometime in the next couple of days to give us all the good settings for that.
Roger.
Plan for shooting some film out the window during re-entry. Mike Collins informing the Earth. Takes about 25 minutes for a good tracking series of signals to be refined by the computers in the Mission Control Center, by the guys in the trench down on the front row, the trajectory officers.
I'm looking ahead at the flight plan in front of me, and I see a nice long EEP period of about an hour and then a rest period of about 10 hours. I would imagine that all three astronauts could well use that rest after the major events of Sunday and Monday, enough to tire almost any human being.
This is Apollo Control. The flight dynamics officer reports that the burn was very nominal. Almost precisely as planned, the burn duration was about 3 seconds long, but the velocity change was almost precisely what we had been expecting. At the present time, Apollo 11 is 1,076 nautical miles from the Moon. The velocity continuing to drop off, down now to 6,698 feet per second.
6,698 feet per second. That means that it's dropped down to a speed, give me just a quick moment there. 6,698, did he say? Yes.
Yes.
That would be about 7,300 kilometers per hour, just a little over that.
Now, it continues to drop for 14 hours, was it?
Was that
another 13 hours.
Another 13 hours.
In fact, let me read you out the figure there for our listeners all over the world who may wonder about this. It will continue to reduce down again, I'll say, to some 4,000 feet per second. I have these velocities strictly in the English system, feet per second. This is lunar reference. Now, we change reference also at 148 hours. At that point, the spacecraft moves from moon gravitational pull to a point where the Earth exerts a stronger pull on it. 148 hours, 4,299 feet per second velocity in reference to the moon, and 3,979 feet per second in reference to the Earth. And from then on, we can watch the Earth reference velocity beginning to pick up faster and faster and faster.
Rhett, one interesting note for our listeners who have clear skies and can look out tonight. I understand that with a low-power telescope, they may be able to see Apollo 11 coming back, and they should look in the direction of the constellation Virgo.
Well, constellation Virgo. Does that mean it's is that very far off to the east of the lunar crescent?
I wouldn't think it would be too far off, no.
From our view here on Earth, it should be fairly close. Would it be? It's about a third magnitude star, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
If the light reflects properly off the command module.
Well, Don Beatty, we were talking earlier before this broadcast, and I understand that you have already seen some of the seismic charts that have begun to come back from the surface of the moon, that seismic experiment that astronauts Neil Armstrong and his colleague left on the Earth, or on the moon.
Yes, Dr. Latham showed the first seismographs that came back, and he was able to pick up on the seismograph the impacts of the portable life support systems which were ejected from the lunar module before Eagle lifted off from the lunar surface. Both of the portable life support systems thrown out one slightly after the other were recorded by the seismograph, so we know that it is working very nicely.
You have any idea what is causing the seismograph to kick up? Just slight disturbances?
Well, he indicated that there was quite a bit of activity in the very beginning, and he felt that this was just due to the seismometer sort of settling onto the surface and coming to a thermal equilibrium. But the kicks that he was getting from the portable life support system were directly attributable to those things hitting the surface.
I haven't heard of any success with the laser reflector yet. As to my understanding, they haven't zeroed in on it. Have you heard a later report, Don?
Well, last night before we went off the air, there was a report that Lick did get a return.
That was found to be erroneous, we heard today.
Oh, is that right? Well, I hadn't heard that corrected.
I'm afraid we're about to come to the end of this special broadcast on the flight of Apollo 11. The spacecraft has successfully fired its main engine, putting it on a path back to Earth, with splashdown in the mid-Pacific Ocean on Thursday at about 16 hours 51 GMT. The past 12 hours have been busy ones for astronauts Neil Armstrong, Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins. At 17 hours 54 on Monday, a perfect liftoff from the moon by the lunar landing craft Eagle after a 21 hour and 36 minutes stay on the lunar surface. Then at 21 hours 35 GMT, a successful docking with the mother spacecraft Columbia, orbiting some 110 kilometers above the lunar surface. The big day, of course, was on Sunday, July 20th, when Eagle landed on the surface of the moon at 20 hours 17 GMT. Then Neil Armstrong became the first man to set foot on the moon early Monday morning at about 2 hours 56 GMT. Both Armstrong and LM pilot Buzz Aldrin spent some 2 hours and 36 minutes on the lunar surface. The final event in this 8-day lunar landing flight will come on Thursday, July 24th, with the landing in the mid-Pacific Ocean. The Voice of America's worldwide coverage of landing and recovery will begin at 16 hours GMT. My thanks to my colleagues. This is William McCrory at the Apollo News Center in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.